Hi, everyone. This is Marion from the Talking Information Center, and this is the Patriot Ledger for Tuesday, June 16th. Well, watch out for traffic if you're in Plymouth today, because they'll be filming downtown. The popular Amazon Prime show, The Summer I Turned Pretty, is set to film today in Plymouth. While the filming is taking place under the title Keeping Score, a production report circulating online suggests it's a sequel to the popular Amazon series The Summer I Turned Pretty, which is a coming-of-age romantic TV series based on the beloved book trilogy of the same name by Jenny Han. Filming began about 2 months ago in North Carolina. The town of Plymouth said in a notice that there will be temporary traffic disruptions and parking restrictions today, according to the filming. Town officials and Plymouth Police Department are working closely with the production team to minimize disruptions, manage traffic flow, and ensure public safety. Production is set to take place from noon to 11 p.m., starting on Main Street and Court Street during the day and moving to Lydon Street in the evening. Lydon Street will be closed to traffic between 9 and 11 p.m. The street will be accessible from Carver Street, and pedestrian access to the homes and businesses will remain open. Parking restrictions will be in place in the following areas: Court Street, east side only from 55 Court Street to Brewster Street, and west side only from Russell Street to 16 Court Street. Brewster Street, north side only. North Street, both sides from Main Street to 10 North Street. Main Street, east side only from North Street to Middle Street. West side only from North Street to 52 Main Street and four spaces north and south of Lydon Street. Residents and business owners with questions can contact the production team directly, and that number is 781-269-1573. The city of Quincy is not going to buy the Eastern Nazarene College campus. The council rejected Mayor Tom Koch's plan to purchase the campus of the former Eastern Nazarene College for $22.5 million. This happened last night at the city council meeting. Six councilors voted against the plan and three voted in favor. The price includes $21 million for the purchase price and $1.5 million in associated costs. The city signed a letter of intent with the college's transition board in late April, which set June 15th as the deadline for the council to approve the purchase. On June 11th, Ward 5 Councilor McKee said she spoke with the college president and board chair, who said they would not extend the deadline. At an earlier council meeting, City Councilor Jim Timmons said other buyers expressed interest after the $21 million price tag became public. Council President Ann Mahoney voted no due to concerns over city finances, especially its high debt load, which she said totals $2 billion when authorized, but uninsured debt is taken into account. It's been framed as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, said Mahoney. It's only a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity if you can afford it. Mahoney complained that Koch administration hasn't been transparent about the city's financial health, withholding information requested by the council. We shouldn't have to become forensic accountants to understand the city's financial condition, she said. Ward 5 Councilor Maggie McGee, who represents the neighborhood surrounding the campus, voted no, saying the city hasn't shown a track record of successfully managing property acquisitions and development projects. McGee said she looked at the city's own model request for proposals for senior housing at ENC. That document scores bidders based on track record, financial condition, design plans, and other criteria. McGee referenced the Monroe building, purchased by the city in 2021, where she said only one tenant pays the market rate. She also mentioned Granite Leaks Golf Course, saying the city hasn't fulfilled a council request to audit the terms of the lease and uses funds drawn from an oversight account to pay an employee whose work is unrelated to the golf course. Speaking on the city's finances, McGee quoted a credit rating agency analyst who told that Bloomberg said Quincy should monitor its capital debt insurance pretty carefully. Under that rubric, my evaluation of the proposal falls short of a passing grade, McKee said. I do, however, believe that the council and the administration can still exert control over the property through zoning changes. At-large Councilor Noel DeBona voted yes, saying that the $21 million price makes financial sense. This is a good decision for the city, he said, and it's a great deal for the city. At-large Councilor Ziguang Susan Wong voted no, criticizing the administration for providing the two-year capital improvement plan she requested weeks ago, just 48 hours before the deadline vote. Reading from projections, she tallied $23 million in bonds to be issued over the next 2 years for projects ranging from seawalls, school renovations and repairs, vehicle replacement programs, and park improvement projects. Wong closed her comments saying that voters in November elected 7 new councilors to change what she describes as the city's loose spending habits. If the administration refuses to honor the overwhelming demand for change from people across the city, how can you expect people to have faith in you, to believe whatever plan you present, she said. Ward 4 Councilor Virginia Ryan voted no, saying that some residential properties the city plans to sell haven't been inspected and aren't turnkey ready. She recalled the Hospital Hill development, which transformed Quincy Hospital into a 490-unit Ashla Park apartment complex. Ryan said the developer and the city promised senior housing then as now. Ward 3 Councilor Walter Hubley voted yes, saying the project presented great value at relatively low cost, and he listed all of the community uses, including the administration's plan. Ward 2 Councilor Richard Ash voted yes, agreeing with Hubley. The value is there, he said. It's simple. I think there's a good plan in place. Ash added his opinion that community support for the proposal is, quote, overwhelming. Ward 6 Councilor Deborah Riley voted no, raising concerns over the impact of the city's finances on taxpayers and saying that private control of the property won't necessarily be all bad, while city control won't necessarily be all good. Riley cited significant cost overruns with the $175 million public safety building and the Quincy Animal Shelter. Your property taxes will make up the shortfall, Riley said. Koch published planned in late May to sell off 14 residential properties and parcels, retain the library, administration buildings, gymnasium, performing arts center, and athletic fields for public use, and convey the bulk of the main campus to a private developer for senior housing. In April, Quincy signed the letter of intent with the board of Eastern Nazarene College, which named the $21 million, which set June 15th as a deadline for council approval. Since then, several councilors have raised concerns about the city's $1.8 billion debt load, asked for a two-year forecast of capital improvement projects requiring bonds and the sale of city-owned properties to defray the cost of the ENC purchase. In February of 2025, Eastern Nazarene President Colleen Durr announced an agreement to sell the entire 20-acre campus at 23 East Elm Street to Crane Company, whose founder, Graham Crane, graduated with a bachelor's degree in 2006. Prior to the announcement of the sale agreement, the Quincy Planning Board endorsed a preliminary subdivision application that the college had submitted to carve up the campus into 30 single-family lots and 2 multifamily lots. But in November of 2025, Crane backed out. Koch later said he essentially nixed the deal, telling Crane the proposal was too dense for the neighborhood. In February 2026, a year after Durr announced the deal with Crane, Koch announced his plan for the city to acquire the campus during his annual State of the City address. The only way for the community to shape the future of the ENC campus is to control the ENC campus, he said. So tonight I announce the city's intention to purchase the property so we can engage in an extensive community process to determine future uses for the campus. And still from Quincy, the former director of Quincy's Elder Service Department will appear in federal court for sentencing for embezzlement tomorrow, June 17th. But what will be the sentence for Thomas Claspy Jr.? In a newly filed court document, his lawyer says he should not have to serve any time. The U.S. attorney is asking for just over a year in prison. Claspy, age 62, pleaded guilty in March to 12 counts of fraud, theft, and transportation of stolen property. Claspy is scheduled to appear before Judge Patty Bisaris in the John Joseph Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston's Seaport District. Assistant U.S. Attorney Christina Barkley has recommended a 13-month prison sentence. Claspy Bixby's attorney, Claudia Lagos, is calling for time served, which was one day, substantial restitution, continued therapy in home confinement in her sentencing memorandum. In arguing for 13 months, Buckley wrote that Caspi robbed Quincy seniors of over $136,000 by forging purchase orders and grabbing cash receipts from a safe he installed in the Kennedy Center, a senior center that provides classes, meals, and other services. Claspi's thefts include 53 pounds of bourbon steak tips, a framed portrait of himself, time in a recording studio singing songs, cleaning services, and a Prius for his secret girlfriend, and 27 fleece vests bearing the phrase Men of Divine Mercy, which Claspi distributed to members of the men's Catholic organization to which he and Mayor Tom Koch belonged. The defense sentencing memorandum acknowledged Claspi's breach of public trust, but argues that Claspi's theft from at least 2021 to 2024 don't give the full picture. Lagos describes a man of faith, public servant, devoted father, caretaker of family members in illness and distress, and friend to the needy. The memorandum states that Claspi has already suffered humiliation and lost his career, reputation, and retirement security. Lagos notes how Claspi was arrested in his Fitchburg home in front of his wife and son, strip-searched, and held in a detention cell in a Boston courthouse before his arraignment. Claspi received 14 letters of support from his wife, son, and sister, as well as other family members and personal friends, according to the documents. The prosecution, by contrast, says that Claspi received a comfortable $140,000 in annual salary and stole out of greed and a sense of immunity arising from his close relationship with Koch. Claspi had no shame flaunting his theft among the Kennedy Center employees because he knew they would be too scared of his relationship with Mayor Koch to report him, Buckley wrote in the sentencing memorandum. Elderly Quincy residents trusted Claspi with their money, and Claspi used their money to treat himself to steak tips and a snowblower and to buy gifts for his wife, his son, and to pay rent for his girlfriend. In her sentencing memorandum, Lagos wrote that Claspi will pay restitution out of pension contributions he made over his long career with the city, which began in 1997. To expedite the process, Claspi waived his right to challenge pension forfeiture, Lagos wrote, which will allow him to access his retirement contributions as quickly as possible and to direct those funds toward restitution. After consulting with the Quincy Retirement Board's legal counsel, Claspi says he will be able to pay the money back by the end of August. Claspi will appear in courtroom 19 at the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston at 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday, June 17th. The Patriot Ledger will provide updates after the hearing. A state amendment could provide health care for retired police dogs. Plenty of people believe the bond between human and animal can just be as powerful as one between two people. Animal lovers and pet owners regularly spend their time, money, and affection dedicated to helping our furry friends live healthy and full lives. It's this mentality that has crossed over into politics in Massachusetts with the initiative aimed at providing health care for a segment of the animal population, retired police and military service dogs. These canines spend their lives running toward danger to protect others, said Kelly Doner, Taunton-based state senator for 3rd Bristol and Plymouth District, in a May 22nd statement announcing the approval by the Massachusetts Senate of the amendment that, if enacted into law, will establish a retirement fund specifically for the health care of retired police and military dogs. Dubbed the Retired Police and Military Canine Care Fund, also known as Dakota's Law, the amendment would in Massachusetts help fund medical treatment, rehabilitation, and long-term care for these service animals, some of whom suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and other conditions as a result of the work they did in police and military canine divisions. They served with incredible loyalty, courage, and dedication in some of the most dangerous situations imaginable. After years of protecting our communities, they deserve dignity, compassion, and proper care in retirement, said Duna in her statement. Dakota's Law is named after Dakota, a former member of the Newton Police Department's K-9 Division. Dakota assisted in the manhunt for the perpetrators of the Boston Marathon bombings in 2013. Dakota would develop PTSD as a result of his service, said Dooner in a written release. In the documentary, Healing Dakota, which chronicled Dakota's rehabilitation process, it is revealed that he had been exposed to flashbangs and had been injured from broken glass in a window, which required surgery. PTSD doesn't discriminate, said James Lamont, founder of the K-9 PTSD Research Center in Seekonk and former owner, therapist, and friend of Dakota. Formerly a professional canine trainer, Lamont stated the nonprofit research center in 2019 when he became Dakota's owner after the dog's retirement from service. Lamont said retired service dogs exhibiting behavioral issues like aggression face the threat of euthanasia from handlers and agencies that don't know what to do with them. Lamont currently homes, cares for, and treats retired police and military dogs at the Canine PTSD Research Center. In Healing Dakota, which he produced, he details all the behavioral problems Dakota had and how he developed behavioral therapy methods for dealing with trauma in canines. The movie speaks with academic experts, including Dr. Nicholas H. Dodman, Professor Emeritus from the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University, about the existence, symptoms, and causes of canine PTSD. Lamont told the Gazette the United States military now acknowledges PTSD in canines and will use that diagnosis when dogs in their service are discharged and retired. A housing plan would raise office buildings. Developer is proposing 520-unit housing project next to the North Quincy MBTA station, replacing a parking lot and two granite telecommunication buildings under a state zoning law. The project will not need City Zoning Board of Approval to build due to the MBTA Communities Act. Representative of Dallas-based Trammell Crow Residential will attend a community meeting at 150 Newport Avenue Extension on June 16th, that's today, at 6 p.m., to answer questions and address concerns. This according to a letter posted to Facebook by Ward 3 Councilor Walter Hubley. The development at 100 to 150 Newport Avenue would include 500 parking spaces, according to Hubley's letter. Rendering show four separate multifamily buildings. Inside the residential buildings, unit will range from studios through three bedrooms with Class A finishes, Hubley's post read. Future residents will have access to desirable common area amenities, including a clubhouse, resort-style pool, fitness center, co-working spaces, dog park, and on-site parking. Billionaire Robert Hale, the founder and CEO of Granite Telecommunications, currently owns the two locations, which total about 9 acres and contain two four-story office buildings built in the late 70s. Hale moved Granite Telecommunications Customer Service Center from the site in September of 2024 into a 240,000-square-foot office building at 1 Heritage Drive across the street. The move was facilitated by as much as $8 million in local and state tax breaks. If realized, the project would be the second massive development built along the North Quincy MBTA station. On the other side of the tracks, the Abbey, constructed over the first half of the 2020s, stretches along Hancock Street, with over 600 apartments above commercial space anchored by Target. Hubley's post notes that the project would require review by the Conservation Commission. About half of 150 Newport Avenue Extension site sits inside the FEMA's 2025 flood zone map. In 2023, City Council included the project site in a new zoning district created to comply with the state's MBTA Communities Act, which was passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Charlie Baker in 2021. The high-density district allows developers to build multifamily housing as of right, meaning developers will not need to get approval from local permitting grant authorities. Projects within the district will still be subject to site plan reviews by the planning board. Hale, or Fox Rocks, his development company technically, bought 150 Newport Ave Extension in 2013 for just under $14 million. He bought 100 Newport Avenue through a different LLC in 2005 for $11.4 million. The city assesses the two properties at about $17 million each. If Hale sells these buildings, it's unclear what the market value would be. In May, Hingham-based Atlantic Development announced plans for a 315 age-restricted condominiums for buyers 55 and older at 1600 Crown Colony Drive in Quincy, a 240,000-square-foot building on a 15-acre parcel that formerly housed Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Braintree names a new police chief. Robert J. Kilroy, Jr., Deputy Chief of Police in Walpole, has been appointed Braintree's next police chief, pending confirmation by the Braintree Town Council, Mayor Aaron V. Joyce announced on Friday, June 12th. Kilroy replaces former Chief Timothy Cahoon, who departed the department on Wednesday, February 11th, to take the chief position in Newton. Deputy Chief Robert Joseph has served as acting police chief since then. Kilroy brings 26 years of policing experience to the force. He joined the Walpole Police Department in 2009 as a police officer and served as sergeant and lieutenant before reaching his current executive role. Kilroy has also been an officer in Franklin and North Attleboro and also served in the Massachusetts Army National Guard. I'm impressed by his professional experience and achievements throughout his law enforcement career, and I believe he is exceptionally well-suited to lead the Braintree Police Department, said Joyce in a press release. We look forward to finalizing the hiring process and welcoming him to the town of Braintree. Kilroy holds a master's degree in criminal justice from UMass Lowell and a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Newbury College. Kilroy also received the FBI's Law Enforcement Executive Development Association Leadership Trilogy Award, a prestigious credential in law enforcement leadership and management. Throughout my career, he said, I've embraced the concepts of community engagement and the efficient application of law enforcement to create a safe and welcoming environment for all. I'm excited for this opportunity and look forward to working with the dedicated men and women of the Braintree Police Department, Mayor Joyce, and engaging with residents to continue to build a positive relationship based on trust, collaboration, and a commitment to community. The Town Council will review the appointment in the coming weeks. Stoughton drowning victim was identified as a man from Taunton. The 20-year-old who was pulled from a Stoughton pond on Thursday in life-threatening condition has died, according to a statement from the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office. The District Attorney's Office identified him as Anderson Texeira Gonzalez, 20, of Taunton, in a written statement on Friday, June 12th. Massachusetts State Police dive team, who was working to assist the local Stoughton Police public safety personnel, located the young man after about an hour and a half. The search launched after reports of a kayaker in distress came into Stoughton about 2:33 p.m. on June 11th. Stoughton Fire Chief Michael Carroll said the victim was transported to BMC South Hospital with life-threatening injuries and that they had been paddling in a canoe with friends. According to reporting by Enterprise Media Partner WCBB-TV, officials said the canoe tipped over and the victim never resurfaced. Stoughton Police and Fire, along with mutual aid partners, are on scene at Ames Pond and Highland Street following a report of a kayaker in distress in the water, Stoughton Police said on a post on Facebook. Police said Highland Street, which has been closed between West Street and Canton Street, has since reopened. Massachusetts State Police Detective Unit, assigned to the Norfolk District Attorney's Office, and Stoughton Police are investigating. Assisting the Stoughton Police and Fire Departments and the MSP Dive Team were the Easton, Avon, Canton Fire Departments, the Plymouth County Dive Team, the Massachusetts Environmental Police, and the Metro LEC Drone Unit, and the Mansfield Emergency Management Agency. Quincy summer youth programs will begin soon. As the school year ends and summer begins, Quincy's Recreation Department offers plenty of affordable ways for kids to stay active in body and mind. From boating to basketball, department listings can meet the interests and schedule demands of most families. The fun begins June 29th and continues for 8 weeks until August 20th, with specific dates and fees varying between programs. Before registering for a program, you must first create an account with the Recreation Department. Grade levels in the program descriptions refer to the grade students will enter in the fall of 2026. For full details, please visit the Quincy Recreation Department's website and create an account. AccuWeather says that El Niño is imminent. El Niño is imminent, according to experts, and will have impacts on the weather all over the United States. El Niño is not a storm. It doesn't affect you directly overnight, AccuWeather expert meteorologist Paul Pastorlock said in writing. But the stronger the signal, the more it can dominate other weather patterns and amplify extremes. This El Niño is developing unusually fast. Most El Niños begin in the fall. This one should start in June and strengthen quickly. What does it all mean for the weather in Massachusetts and beyond? Well, here's what to know. El Niño occurs when the winds blowing east to west in the Pacific Ocean along the equator weaken, allowing warmer waters to collect across the eastern Pacific's equatorial region. When this happens, it can influence weather globally as well as in the United States. At the center of the El Niño development is a Kelvin wave, a large pulse of subsurface warm water now rising toward the ocean surface, according to NOAA. El Niño creates shear in the Atlantic Ocean, and shear typically has a tempering effect on hurricanes. As the system develops, it could cause a decrease in hurricanes in the Atlantic Basin this season, according to AccuWeather. It typically has the greatest impact in the late fall and early spring. AccuWeather 2026 Atlantic Hurricane Season Forecast projects 11 to 16 named storms in the basement. With the El Niño arrival early in the hurricane season, we're now leaning closer to 11 named storms rather than 16 in the Atlantic this year, AccuWeather hurricane expert Alex DeSilva added in a press release. However, forecasters stress that even if the number of storms is lower than usual, it does not mean the season won't be dangerous. A super El Niño is defined as ocean temperatures reaching 2 degrees centigrade or greater above average. It's a rare event that is considered unusually strong. It occurs when the water temperatures in the region of the Pacific Ocean near the equator reach 2 degrees Celsius above the historic average. This is a good chance this occurs later in 2026 and continues into 2027, said AccuWeather in its release. It runs from June 1st to November 30th each year. We have a few shout-outs to local high school teams. The first was Scituate's win in lacrosse in Division 3. BC High's lacrosse team won Division 1 and Notre Dame Division 2 in their tennis tournament. That's a wrap for the Patriot Ledger for Tuesday, June 16th. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you all have a great day. We'll also end with a little piece of history trivia. On this date in 1858, accepting the Illinois Republican Party's nomination for the United States Senate, Abraham Lincoln said the issue of slavery in the United States had to be resolved, declaring, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." And in 1903, the Ford Motor Company was incorporated in Detroit, Michigan. In 2015, real estate mogul Donald Trump launched his successful campaign for the presidency of the United States in a speech at the Trump Tower in Manhattan. And in 2016, Walt Disney Company opened the Shanghai Disneyland, which was the first theme park in mainland China. And lastly, in 2022, witnesses testified to the January 6th committee that Donald Trump's closest advisors viewed his last-ditch efforts to pressure Vice President Mike Pence to reject the tally of state electors and overturn the 2020 election as nuts, crazy, and even likely to incite riots.